This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Well, here we are, Botch. This is it, the final PatCast of the 2017-2018 Canucks season. We are live at Woody's Pub in Coquitlam, and as always, the podcast, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM here in Coquitlam as well. What the people don't know is when the live recording is done tonight, a bus is going to be outside, and we're going to take everybody over to Eagle Ridge as well. So,
well, no, it's a big crowd. I feel nervous. I don't know how it's going to go. It's not our usual situation, so
the podcast is growing up.
There's some anxiety. I know that this is going to be recorded and it will go out to the masses.
Yep.
But I do feel like I should tell people, like, whatever we say in here should just stay, maybe we can just stay between us.
Between friends,
podcasters. Podcasters and listeners.
Eagle Ridge has been a great sponsor. I mention it every time. 2595 Barnett Highway. Two blocks west of Coquitlam Center. And again, if you're in the market for a new vehicle, by all means, please check them out. Start your search online. All right. This thing, podcast, and the season started way back when. I remember recording the first one at your luxurious Airbnb in Penticton at Young Stars.
Good times.
We did them on the road. We did them in hotel rooms, a bunch of rinks. We've done them in the office. And here we are at Woody's Pub with a captive audience. So the podcast is growing up, and it's terrific. It's always been a fun project. But this is kind of putting a bow on the season that was, because let's be honest, 82 games, it wasn't a lot of fun on a lot of nights to sit through and watch, but the season has ended.
Can I just say, like, this week hasn't been a lot of fun? Like,
We're getting there.
Like, if we could flash back a year, you're painting that great picture of you and I in Penticton. If you had told me then, a year from now on July 4th, we would be here and you would be telling me the big free agent acquisition that the Canucks would have made on July 1st would have been Jay Beagle,
mm-hmm.
I would have been pretty angry. I would have been pretty angry at that time.
You?
I am even more angry.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, no, I am. Like, I mean, and I'm not, I don't want to perform to the crowd, but I am upset. I'm upset by the whole thing. I'm upset that the Vancouver Canucks, this team that the past three seasons has been the lowest scoring team in the NHL, put no effort, none, in trying to fix the offense, trying to help the offense. 146 points out the door. Sedin's gone. Vanek gone. Vanek just signed a one-year deal. Were they interested in Vanek? No. Anthony Duclair out there all of a sudden went 25, 26 years old, had 44 points 3 years ago. His agent called the Vancouver Canucks. What did the Canucks say? Not interested. Not interested. Not interested in Grabner. Just scored 27 goals, went for a shitload at the trade deadline. Not interested. Not interested in Reeder. Not interested. And they had interest in Riley Nash. That didn't go far. Not interested in Bozak.
Fair enough. Why? Because they got Beagle. They got Beagle.
Yeah, they got Beagle. You're right. They got fucking Beagle. They wanted Beagle and they got Beagle. No, but like, what? Why is that? Like, let's go all in for Beagle. I see his agent, because I have to get all my fucking Beagle shit out right away.
All right.
I see his agent out there. 8 or 9 teams, a third of the league, he claims, were in on Beagle. Like, I have a really hard time believing a third of the league was in on Beagle. I called around. I called some of the teams I know. They found it hard to believe, too. And one team I called, yeah, they were in Beagle. Guess what they were in on? 1 year, $1 million. That was their offer to Jay Beagle, okay? So if you're going to go all in on a guy, okay, one of the things that I've heard is that they're tougher now with Beagle and Roussel. Roussel is a shit disturber. I wouldn't necessarily describe him as tough. I would describe him as a grinder. I think he's going to stir stuff up. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be fun to watch. I'm actually fine with Antoine Roussel. I'm cool. Like, you want to add a guy like that, that's fine. Beagle, though, he's not an intimidating guy out there. He'll kill penalties. He's like,
he'll kill Roussel's penalties.
That's what he'll be doing, right? He'll be killing Roussel's penalties.
Yes.
He's a lesser Brandon Sutter. Now, if you have Brandon Sutter already on your team, you were all in on Brandon Sutter. You've paid him all this money. You've made this big trade. You've described him as the foundation of your team. Why do you need another Brandon Sutter?
Well, you don't. You don't.
So you're in total agreement with me on that.
Well, yeah. But it's taken you, like, on Sunday, you seemed like you were in a decent mood at the rink. It was Canada Day. I don't know if you were excited about that, but you didn't seem as worked up on Sunday. Maybe you've had a few days to digest all that's gone on.
Yeah, the whole thing's hit me in waves, right? Because I want a great team. I want a fun team. I want a team that can, I don't know, score goals, okay? Last year, 218 goals, 26th in the NHL. 26. That was with a top 10 power play, a great power play.
Right.
Gone from that are the Sedins. Gone from that is Vanek. Like, good luck. If you want to try to map out the power plays right now, good luck to you mapping out a second power play unit right now. It will be bleak when you do finally get around to taking a look at that. So, I don't want Patterson to play with Brandon Sutter! I don't want that! That's another thing I keep thinking of. I love they drafted Patterson. I love that they drafted Hughes. People say, oh, you're so negative. No, I'm not. Like, I love, like, certain things. I'm like, going to be a huge Patterson guy. But I don't want him. Like, we know what Brandon Sutter is. He's a guy who, nice shot, fine defensively. If you want him as your third line center, fine. But having him in your top six, and everyone's throwing out these lines that I've seen with Sutter, with Patterson, yeah, that hits me in a wave. A wave comes over me, it rocks me. I'm like, fuck, is that going to happen? I don't want to see that happen.
Well, look, you're talking about drawing up a second power. Like, I can't even get there because, like, my head hurts from just trying to work a depth chart with four legitimate lines at the NHL level.
Right. So, and I talked about this in the podcast leading into free agency. The problem with having Sutter and Beagle is you have two similar type players. Neither of them are overtly physical, so they're not really adding that element to it. They're both defensive-styled centers. Shut down guys. They shut down their own line mates most of the time. That's two lines that aren't really going to score. And one of them, like, I look, there's all kinds of time, and maybe trades will happen, and I'm open to all of that. I just, right now, I'm frustrated.
I can tell.
I don't want to see the start of the season. Like, I heard Bruff today on 1040 say, like, he hasn't been this excited about a Canucks season in years. In years. And like, on paper right now, when I'm seeing a lineup that's Horvat first, and the other thing I heard is even you, I think, said,
no.
Like, the depth is fixed. No one's going to question the depth now. I think I heard you
no.
say that. Someone else heard it. Right over here, you heard it too. He said it!
Throw him out! He's out! Out! Get him out!
But if Horvat goes down, and I ask everyone in the room to think about this, if Horvat is injured, what then? What? We're fucked. That's what he said. That's what the man said. I'm all about the Hughes brothers. I want to see Quinn Hughes this year. I think Quinn Hughes, I think he's their second best left side defenseman right now. I think he outplays all of them. He could outplay Delzato, Pouliot, and Hutton in his sleep. He's that good. But now that they're so loaded on defense, they've been unable to make trades. He's looking at this lineup going, where do I fit? You see that quote? Were you there when he had this quote? But, like, yeah, I mean, I guess if I go back to Michigan, it's not the worst thing.
Right.
If they don't know where I fit in, I'm going back. Well,
what? You're looking at me like I'm supposed to have the answer.
Reaction!
Oh. Well, you're getting one from these fine
from
people. I heard the quote, too. The takeaway for me was the thing about going back to Michigan wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. Like, he wants to be here, obviously. Right. Like, any young kid would want to be in the National Hockey League. He's remarkably confident. That was my takeaway from, that was my first time being around Quinn Hughes yesterday at the rink. First time talking to him. I wasn't at the draft. So, you know, man, the kid is polished. Like, he handles himself well. In his mind, I think he thinks he's ready. Like, he's confident without being cocky, but man, is he self-assured. And so he should be. Like, he's a hell of a player. But he's small. Like, damn, is he small.
He knows that.
Wait till you see. I mean, he's not as thin as Patterson, who's going to be playing center sooner than later. Like,
different positions, obviously. Like, yeah. You know, it's one thing to go to a summer prospect camp like this and try to make assessments on a guy. Like, he's been on the ice twice.
But if Troy Stetcher, at his size, can go to college, step into the NHL, and scored, what, 24 points in his first season. 24. He had a great first season. Right away.
All defensemen seem to here have a great first season. Yeah.
That falls apart.
Yeah.
No, if Troy Stetcher can do that, Quinn Hughes can do that. He's more than capable of doing that. He would be great here on a third sheltered third pairing with big-time power play opportunities. He'd be great. And I can see why. And they want to sign him. And I see why. I know why they want to sign him. But I also see it from his perspective. And when he's looking at the left side and he sees Edler, and he sees Pouliot, and he sees Delzado, the coach just loves, and he sees Hutton all ahead of him right now.
Yep.
He has to think to himself, okay, is Green going to side to the young guy who's skating around going wild in training camp, or is he going to side with the veterans that he knows and likes? And I think most people would answer that he's going to side with the veterans.
Well, you were there on Sunday when Jim was made available after free agency, and you know, once we got through all the questions about Beagle and Roussel and Schaller, you know, I asked about the fact that, look, seven of the defensemen are under contract. Stetcher's going to get a deal. And remember that last day of last season, media availability, and Travis Green like pounded on the desk about, I need more from my defense. I need more offense. And I said to Jim, like, are you prepared to come back with this same group? Because right now, and that doesn't include Quinn Hughes, but they've got all these bodies. Like, there's a massive logjam. And then Jim says, well, maybe Quinn Hughes plays, and we've got Ole Ulevi. Like, right, what world are we living in? Like, they're not both going to be here on opening night.
No, but I think that they should be both given a chance to be in the opening night roster. Like, someone's got to move, okay? And I do understand it from the Canucks' perspective that if you are going to make a move, it's worth it to do it before you sign Hughes. Once you sign Hughes, I think other teams know you're desperate, know you've got to unload one of those left side guys. I think it makes sense to me to wait on signing Hughes, try to trade Hutton or Delzado, and I think both of them are tradable if you retain half their salary. I think if you retain half the salary on Hutton, I think that then it becomes worth it for opposing teams to take a chance on him. This is a guy who was a top four defenseman for long stretches in the NHL. When he was with Chris Tanev this year, he was just fine. At the beginning of the season, he was just fine. And when he gets pinned with Gudbranson, not so fine, right? I think a team would take a chance on him. And I think Delzato, with his skill set at $1.5 million, you half it, retain half. That, to me, looks tradable. So I think you move one of those guys to me. Then you sign. Then you say to Quinn Hughes, look, we're not rolling out the red carpet. There's not a clear spot for you. We've got Pouliot, who can also play the right side. We've got Edler, and we've got one of Hutton or Delzato. But if you play great, you are going to be on this team. And I think that to me would be a roadmap to try to fix this offseason. I think that they have to do some things from here till September to fix the offseason. I'm not saying they can't. You know, last year was Vanek, September 1, the great signing. That saved the offseason. You look at all the guys they got on July 1, brutal. Like, Nilsson played himself off the team. Two of them had their contracts rescinded. Another one, Sam Gagner, total huge disappointment.
Right?
Yep. But they saved the offseason when they got Vanek. They can still save this offseason. But right now, I know that there are some fans that are frustrated and angry and disappointed. I understand that because I'm feeling that too.
All right, so you got Beagle, you've got Roussel. I mentioned Schaller to a lesser degree, but you're not doling out 1.9 mil for, like, I've seen people say, oh, you park him in Utica. Like, who? Tim Schaller. Like,
he's not going to Utica.
Right. So now, whether they fix the depth issue or not, they've got this, I mean, they got log jams at every position, but what happens with all the, there's so many tweeners now.
I counted up 20 forwards that would, if you include Mott, you include Jonathan Dallin, you include Boucher, you include Archibald, you work yourself up to 20. And that includes guys like Goldobin and Gontz, who appear to be on their way out. They both appear. I think Gontz gets traded. That's what I think is going to happen. I think that Goldobin requires waivers. Gontz requires waivers. Vertanen is another guy. He's going to be on the team, but he requires waivers now.
Yeah.
Mott's a game away from requiring waivers. They can't risk losing guy, especially a guy like Goldobin, 22 years old. He looked really good. Like, I think it's lost on a lot of people how good he was. From mid-February to the end of the season, he was one of their better players defensively, one of their better forwards in terms of possession. He was right at the top. It was him, Horvat, and Daniel Sedin that led the team in even strength points per 60 minutes played. Cole Dubin was good. He was good down the stretch. He was getting it. He was figuring things out. That's why I had him as a target to say, like, let's give him an opportunity and trade a more established guy like Berchi. But they passed on that.
Well, they didn't just... 3 yards. I was going to say, they didn't just pass on that. They Sven Berchi gets 3 years and 10 mil. What do you make of that contract?
I mean, that's okay. Like, I mean, I like Berchi better than Sam Gagné. So what, he's making a little bit more than Sam Gagné is? I think Berchi has a chance. If you look at the past 3 years, he's got one of the highest shooting percentages in the league. The problem with him, if he stays healthy any of these seasons, he's going to be a 20-goal guy, I think. He's always been on pace, you know, 17, 18 goals. He's been right on pace. But he gets hurt. He gets hurt a lot. And I'm not sure that there's an easy fix for that because he's not the biggest, strongest guy, and he gets hit into the boards. There's multiple opportunities for him to get injured over the course of a season.
But he's no longer part of the young group, right? We've agreed with that. Like, he turned 25 last year. So he,
I think Horvat maybe out, no? Is he?
Horvat's still part of the young guy. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, he's got a few more years.
All right.
Yeah.
Berchi's out. Tanev officially out.
Well, I think so. At 28 going on 29, or is he 29 going on 30? I think he's 30 in...
He's 28. Yeah, he's 28 going on 35 with all those injuries.
Well, there is that, I suppose. You mentioned Hughes as a, you know, third pairing, kind of the right spot for Quinn Hughes.
Right.
But, like, if he's playing third pairing, like, do you not think he has to be wrapped in a giant Chris Tanev blanket if Tanev is still here?
Definitely, I've presented that as a possibility, and I've seen others present that as a possibility. That's a big ask. Like, if Tanev is on the team, he's going to be facing the top forwards, the top lines all the time, because you're not going to want to hand that job to Gudbranson. So I wouldn't be comfortable. Like, I know that that's the go-to spot, and it seems logical, put Hughes with Tanev, but do I really want Hughes out there against, you know, Crosby and against, you know, all the top lines around the league? I would say no. I think he'd be fine with whomever, if he's playing like third and fourth liners. He'd skate circles around guys, and he's going to be good, and he can be good this fall in that spot. So I don't think that's why I don't think it's an absolute requirement that they have to keep Chris Tanev. I mean, it looks that way right now because that Gudbranson pairing's not going to be great, and they do need one solid shutdown pairing, and it looks like Tanev and Edler would be that.
All right, you love to tell the people that you had that amazing run late in the season with all of your predictions. Like, anything you said, like, was coming true. So we've talked about the back pat. Like, I'm sure people here would like to see a Botchford back pat.
I haven't nailed any.
Quinn Hughes, what's going to happen? Will he sign? Where will he play next season?
Quinn Hughes, well, I think he'll make the Canucks. So, I mean, the people here are witness to it. If it does happen, I will have a huge... I'm now announcing. I'm now predicting. This is an official prediction that he'll make the team. Like, he's better than the guys that they have. He's better than. There's not four defensemen on the Vancouver Canucks in the entire organization who are better than Quinn Hughes right now. I think that they want him to be on the team, and I think that they are going to clear out a spot. I am surprised how inactive they've been in terms of making moves. Like, they haven't been able to make any real aggressive moves. They've talked publicly about wanting to be aggressive in the trade market. I've heard privately that they're trying, you know, out there pounding the phones, pounding the sidewalk, trying to make plays, trying to make trades. So far that they've been unable to do it. I think that if you get creative, and an example would be taking half of Delzato's salary, I think you can do it.
Right, but I think
one of these guys is going to get moved.
No, you just kind of got caught in your own trap there when you said if they get creative.
Yeah.
Right? Because we've heard, I told you, you wrote about it last week too. I saw, you know, like, they understand the concept of taking on bad contracts. And yet we're still waiting for them to weaponize this cap space.
Right. Well, I mean, they say that they understand the concept. I've brought it up before. I know that there was a meeting a couple of years ago where one of them said, like, why would we take on a bad contract when we can just sign other guys? And they just...
sign their own bad contracts.
They just did sign. Like, isn't that bizarre? Like, one of the frustrating things I watch is all of the Beagle, Roussel contracts unfolded that day. And both of them are overvalued, overinflated. In fact, that model that Matt Cain had, the 13 worst contracts signed on July 1st. Three of them were the Canucks deals. And people start doing these mental gymnastics of, you know, when can they buy Beagle out? And, well, you know, are they going to be able to retain salary for him in 2 years? And how do they get... Like, that shouldn't be the fallback position on every free agent side. Like, how, when do we get out of this deal? Shouldn't be the thing, right? Like, if you're getting right to that point in negotiations with Beagle, and even if his agent is right, and even if eight teams are in it, and a couple of them are saying 4 years, he turns 33 in October. Why not bail out? Why not say, like, look, we got Brandon Sutter. He does that job already. We can find a guy for the fourth line. Let's try to find a more offensive guy to play with Pettersson on the second line, and let's go. Why not?
I don't have the answers for you. I wish I did.
Well, you heard the answers, though. You heard Jim say, like, one of the part of the thought process to all of this was, let's open the door to Sutter having more offensive opportunities. And this is a guy who's never had more than 40 points in a season.
Right. And Dello roasted the signing heavily. If people have seen the article on The Athletic, like, he took a bunch of comparables over the last, what, like, decade or something, you know, plugged in all the data about players that play all the even strength and shorthanded minutes, no power play time, point production, and, like, it was a pretty sad list that he came up with of guys that fit that Jay Beagle profile, and most had played themselves out of the league by the time they were 33. He's going to be 33 next year.
He's going to be 33. And the other thing that they pointed out, and has been pointed out, is the past two seasons have been the seasons where he's played the most games. 79, and I think he played them all this year, maybe. Before that, there's a long history of injuries here. The Canucks are again betting on a guy who has been injured over the course of his career. He's at an age where that's not going to get any better, where he's played a ton of games the last 2 years. And now he's 33 in October. Like, his last season in Vancouver, he's 37 before the season starts. I don't see how that lines up with, we're going to be extremely young this year. They're not going to be extremely young. There's a spot for Hughes. I think he's going to be on the team. I think they want him on the team. I think part of their thinking is how are we going to win over the fan base, the fans? And I think that is going to be a motivating factor, certainly for ownership. They need Hughes. They need Pettersson. I think they need them both in this lineup.
All right. So, you know, now that July 1st has come, the team is essentially shaped. We deal in realities here. It is. They might make a trade. They're not making a big, big, like, you think they're going to make a
splash? I just gave him the Vanek thing. The Vanek was the game changer.
Right, but there isn't. Vanek's a sign. There isn't another Vanek hanging out there. They're not going to trade for, tell me they're not going to trade for Vanek now. But this team is shaped for the most part. Like,
something's going to change. Like, there's just...
Okay, they might change a piece or two, but for them, they're not swapping out the 20 guys they've got. What they have is essentially the players that they're moving forward with for next season. Like it or not, you had to wait for July 1st to come to see what they did. You may not like what they did, but there's your roster now.
I don't.
So what do they do with Pettersson? Like, where... I think we all agree that
he started this whole podcast talking about that. It keeps me awake at night because I want, I want to see everything that they saw in Sweden all year, right? I want him to roam and be electric and be able to handle the puck and think the game and work with other line mates who can think with him. This is one of the big things that Gradin said when Gradin wanted him to play last year. And part of the reason was he wanted him to play with the Sedins. He thinks the game at that speed. You know who doesn't think the game at that speed? Well, there's a lot of guys in the lineup, right? And a couple of them play center. And I'm worried one of them may end up playing with him because he's not, you know, Brandon Sutter has other duties. He's got other jobs. The two problems, the two top guys to play potentially with Pettersson. By the way, I think there's a very good chance that Green gives Pettersson multiple opportunities in the preseason to play at center. I think he wants him at center. The team wants him at center. He wants to play center. So I am of the belief that there is a chance he could still start the season at center. Fuck, great. Like, I'll be all in on that. I'll have a total change of tune. But the two guys that they want him to, that I hear most often that he's going to play with if he starts at the wing are Sutter. We know his struggles and we know the way he sees the ice. It's not great.
Right.
He's a shutdown defensive guy. And God bless, he's got other things to worry about. He's worrying about shutting down other teams' guys. He's worrying about, like, slowing the game down. He's not worried about speeding up and making plays and giving goes with a rookie, super rookie. He's not. That's just not how he's wired. It's not.
Maybe he's practicing here this summer.
And the other guy is Sam Gagne. And Sam Gagne was their worst defensive, by most metrics, their worst defensive forward. And that's another thing that gives me concern and anxiety, because I know that Green is going to be, he's going to be on Pettersson, because Pettersson likes to move around. He doesn't, you know, he's not, he likes to be down below the net, and he likes to kind of freewheel, play center field, be all around. That's part of the reason that so many people think he can play center, is because he was moving all over the ice when he was a winger. Okay? And then you pin him with Gagne, the worst defensive forward. You got Pettersson spinning his wheels all over the place, Gagne trying to find him, and Green going, fuck, I can't have these guys out there together. They're not good enough defensively. So that's why I'm concerned about both those guys.
And I think you're well within your rights. I mean, again, we want to see Elias Pettersson put in the right spots to bring out all that stuff that you just said. And so we've been in the Trey Tanev Club, the TTC, for a while. Now I'm in the anybody but Sutter, I think, is the ABS. The
AB, not a bad club.
You know, I think everybody in this room will expand. We'll march out in the streets here. We'll write down Brunette and Coquitlam, and everybody will come out and they'll follow behind us. And I don't know what happens. Again, we talk about, the thinking going into July 1st was they need an offensive center. Well, they didn't get one of those.
It's not that they didn't try. That's the thing.
No, okay.
They didn't try.
But they didn't. They're no further ahead now than they were last week in terms of offensive centers. They may think they are with Brandon Sutter, but they're not. We know that,
right.
And they're going to learn that the hard way, I guess. But I was also a believer that they needed to do something more on the left side as well. Like, I think they're all right on the right side. Besser, if Pettersson's there, Vertanen, Eriksson can play the right side.
Well, I think Eriksson's got to play the left.
Well, now I'm starting to think that too, because I don't like the left side. I mean, Berchi is what he is. We've established that. He's plus, over 25. I'm not all in on Brandon Leipzig.
Yeah,
Goldobin. I think you're higher on Goldobin than I am. But I think part of that is just knowing the way Travis Green sees Goldobin and the way that he might utilize him. But look, I like the right side. I don't like center, and I don't like the left side. And I'm with you. Like, goals are going to be a massive issue for this hockey team. So I know people want to believe that, last year was rock bottom and then it's got to get better. But, folks, I'm not sure that
this is year five of the Lyndon Benning era. It should be on the upswing. You should see, at this point, light at the end of the tunnel. And there's certainly some, sparks, and there are some flashlights out there that you're looking in the darkness. Obviously, Brock Besser leads the way. Pettersson, for sure, great pick. I think Hughes can be that type of guy. But as far as getting out of this, getting to be a team that can be average in the NHL in goal scoring, being a team that can have an average defense in terms of producing offense and in terms of mobility, that's one of the things that people don't talk about with this blue line. It's just not mobile. Without Hughes in it, they just don't move. And that's part of the reason that Delzato has that top four role, because he's one of the few guys that can really, really skate in that top six. And I think it's also one of the frustrations that Green had with Hutton, because Hutton can be a good skater. Whatever happened to him this year, not in shape, not in condition, not the right way, not the coach's favorite, all of that. But he wasn't put in a role where he could kind of make that shine, and because of it, they were not a mobile blue line. So to get to an average scoring team, an average defense, we're still a long ways away from getting there, right? It's not going to happen this year. I look at this roster right now, I'm not seeing one that, if all goes right, they can be competing for a playoff spot into March.
I mean, we documented it throughout the year. I don't think either one of us was surprised that the common thread with the free agent signings on Sunday was this element of grit and toughness.
Yes,
and
I was super surprised by that.
But we talked. No, but
you know that
Travis Green hated the way his team.
But so what? You can't dictate. A team cannot dictate. An executive branch of any NHL team, any sports team, can't dictate their decisions based on what the coach wants. They all want the same thing. They all want they all want Roussels and Beagles and Sutters and dime store Bergerons, guys that play great two-way guys. They don't want the Goldobins. They don't want the guys that are high-risk guys. And if they are, they better be like Besser and score, be on pace to score 40 goals. Then great. They'll be all in on that. But those guys need opportunities to grow. Calgary didn't like Berchi. Coaches didn't like Berchi. Wherever he went. Came here, got opportunity because of the trade. He's been good.
Right, okay, but back to my point.
You can't let Green dictate, like I've heard this. But don't you think? That I keep hearing, that Green laid out the free agent plan. Like, what the fuck? What? Why is Green laying out the free agent plan? No, I'm not kidding.
Because he's the coach. He ultimately has to pull the strings on the guys that he's got.
I swear, one of the great things I think about Vegas was that Gallant had very little say in how that roster was constructed. They constructed the roster. They did the best they could to find the players they could, and then they gave him to Gallant. Because you give, like, what did Willie want? He wanted Dorsett. He wanted Lyndon Vay. Like, what? Like, fuck, why? They traded a second for Lyndon Vay? Because Willie wanted him? That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't.
It didn't work out very well. I agree with you on that one.
The coaches aren't general managers, and football's different. Right? Belichick becomes general manager. He's running the team. He can pick all the players. Fucking great. It doesn't happen in hockey. Who are the coaches that are general managers in hockey? Why aren't they all becoming general managers?
Then why did the Canucks wind up doing what they did on Sunday?
I don't know! I don't have an answer to that.
Well, you got to live with it for 4 years now.
Believe me.
You've got 4 years to figure that out. That's your challenge.
I look at like how their free agent years or how their off seasons went. 2016, they went for the big names. They gunned for Erickson. They went all in on Gudbranson. Didn't work out. So 2017, they tried to fix the offense by finding this periphery offensive guys. And it was like this year, like it's like they have tunnel vision. Like this year, we have to get Grinders and PK guys. And that's all they were focused on. Like, why not say, oh, to declare, like, let's give you a chance. And I thought the most revealing exchange on Sunday with Benny was when JD asked Jim, he said, like, look, there's a lot of guys who are restricted free agents. They were in the 25, 26-year-old range. And this is an aside from me. These are the perfect type of guys that could go Vegas on you. The type of guys that you bet on now that have shown flashes but haven't been used right, deployed right on the teams they're on. You get them on your team. Nick Shore, Duclair, DeMilo. Like there's like five or six of these guys that I think all have chances, all have upside. Beagle has no upside. He is what he is, 33 years old, right? So JD asked Jim, like, were you interested in any of these guys? And he, like, Jim said, I couldn't even believe this. Jim said, no, we weren't interested in any of them. And part of the reason was we like, essentially, I'm paraphrasing, we like the prospects that we have now coming up. And we don't want competition for them. Not real competition. That's, to me, what I heard when he said we had no interest in any of these RFAs that weren't qualified that became UFAs. We don't want competition for our young guys. And you know, we're good with the young guys we have. Well, guess what? Some of these young guys aren't going to work out. They're not all going to work out. They need a ton of guys. They need tons of guys to take chances on.
The other thing that Jim said on Sunday was about all these tweeners that we talked about was, you know, you hear it all the time. It creates internal competition. It creates, you know, at training camp, there's going to be all these.
Marcel and Beagle?
No.
Which guys?
Like all the other guys, whether it's Goldobin or Vertanen or, you know, those guys. But essentially, what they've done on Sunday is throw a roadblock. Like, you limit, because those guys they signed on Sunday are all guaranteed to be on the roster to start the season.
Oh, yeah.
So
with these kind of salaries, $3 million, and I'm not really concerned about this year. I look forward, like when I look forward to the 1920 season, 2019-2020, and I see there's got seven forwards, including Roussel and Beagle, who all make $3 million plus, and that doesn't include Pedersen and Besser. So then you're up to nine.
Yeah.
Vertanen, you're up to 10. Like there's no spots. Like, there's already, looking forward, there's very little opportunity there if Cole Lynn blows up to give him a chance, if Dallin blows up to give him a chance. And maybe they will. Something has to give. The logjam is too big, and I'm willing, and that's one of the things, this summer I'm willing to say, like, okay, like, I'll wait and see what happens, but I'm certainly a bit distraught about it right now. When I look forward to that 2019, if I'm Cole Lynn, I'm like, where's my spot? Like, how am I going to outplay Beagle? You know, these guys making $3 million, they're not going to the minors. And you know what Travis Green is going to do? He's going to side with the defensive, responsible guys that aren't going to be the risk takers.
Well, I think the great irony on Sunday, at least for me, was the Canucks go all in on Jay Beagle, And what did Washington do? They signed Nick Dowd to a one-year league minimum contract.
That was ridiculous. That was, they just did that for the jokes, right? Like, we won the cup, let's fuck with the Canucks. Like, they...
just trolling, Sunday trolling.
The cost of one of their Stanley Cup final rings, right? Like,
yeah, but he had a great 2015 Calder Cup.
That's true. And there's another guy Green wanted, right?
Yeah.
He wanted Dowd. He wanted Pouliot. The whole team is going to be guys that Travis Green liked over the years. It can't be that. You know where the Canucks have had a lot of success? At the draft. You know who has no say in the draft? Travis Green. He's not there. He's like, I saw him there. I talked to him. He's like, I have no fucking idea about any of these guys. Good. Like, fuck. Thank God. You know what I mean? Like,
just take the summer off. Just come back for training camp.
Yes, that's what coaches should do. They should. I would, if I were suggested, if I were advising a team or an executive, I'd be like, don't listen to your coach. They are going to side with the grinders. They are going to side with the safe, defensive, two-way guys. The league is changing. You need a different style. Obviously, they didn't sign any of these guys a year ago, right? It was all guys with offensive flair, offensive. Right. That's the way they went. All of a sudden, Green shows up. It's a totally different road that they're on.
You are not wrong. I can't tell you you're wrong, but that's a different show and a different segment, I think, isn't it?
No, but do you not, like, are you not worked up about this?
I'm on
the radio saying, like, this is what Green wanted, and this is his plan, and...
It's summer. I'm on holidays now. I'm on a flight to Europe a week from now. No, I'm not worked up. Like, I'll leave that behind. I'll leave that to you. It's a live podcast at Woody's Pub in Coquitlam. It's a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM. And again, if you're in the market for a vehicle, we suggest you start your search online, eagleridgegm.com. Or if you're one of those people in these sunny days of summer, you want to walk the lot and check out the inventory, 2595 Barnett Highway in Coquitlam.
Got an appearance from the Flat J-Pats in the crowd.
Right, and one of the things, which is amazing, and unbelievable, look what you started, but how many times throughout the year do we talk about the power of the podcast? There were two more examples this week, and one was last week when we recorded in the province offices, and there we were, it was after the draft, and we were just, like, as much love as we could throw to Cam Robinson, right?
Cam Robinson, yeah, he was at the draft, he became part of my crew at the draft in Dallas, and the guy, I knew of him, I'd engage with him on Twitter, but he had that weird, crazy Joe handle. I thought, like, this guy's a bit insane, but it turns out the guy's brilliant. Like, he was talking to, like, I was with him talking to NHL scouts in social situations, and he was, like, rhyming off guys that were drafted, second round, 15th overall in 2013, so-and-so. I'm like, fuck, who is this guy? Jesus Christ. I want to hire him.
We'll get a spot at the third microphone here at the...
Not for the Trampkin rule, I'd
have
him on.
But if people didn't see, though, or they heard last week...
He had a bad name, and multiple people said...
Add Crazy Joe DeVille a 3, I think it was, which, again, like, we're pumping this guy's tires, and we're saying, like, you know, up-and-comer, but, you know, you're about building your brand, and we've done a decent job, I think, of that with the podcast, and so we're in a position to, you know, sort of... impart wisdom, I guess, on some of these younger guys. And I said, ditch the Twitter handle. Like, build your own brand. Take ownership of your material. Like, it's that good. You want people to know your name.
Right. And in fact, like, I saw Walker there, and there was a picture that Sad had. Did I talk about this on the last podcast? Like, do you see this picture that Sat took, like a paparazzi shot?
Oh, the two of you guys?
Yeah, of Walker.
Date night.
No, but I ended up at a table. I'm talking to someone over here. He's over here, and, like, it's not fucking pose. Like, he's giving me the worst stink eye I've ever, like, have you focused up on, his look that he was giving me?
I'll go back and look at it.
Like, daggers coming out. I was like, fuck, look at that photo. This guy hates my guts. But the one thing we did agree on, he wanted Robinson to change his name and cut his hair.
He's still got the mop. Yeah, we haven't been, you know, and whatever. That's the guy's look. I'm not here to tell him to cut his hair. But we told him to change his Twitter handle. And sure enough, the next day, he changed the Twitter handle. Okay, so that's
I know one more step.
I'm applauding that.
I know another. Okay. There's one more step to the story. He changed his Twitter handle, and then he had instantly 500 more followers. Like, I think he was at, like, 3,000, he went to 3,500, whatever it was. It was incredible.
Well, I saw him respond to some people and say, like, people were saying, I wasn't sure about you, I didn't know, but now I'm all in. Yeah. So that's the power of the podcast. The other one was, I was hosting on Friday afternoon. We have Bob McKenzie on, his final hit on 1040 of the year, and he's thanking people in Vancouver and all the people that he engages with on Twitter. And then he drops, and I listen to the podcast.
No.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. Bob McKenzie says, I need to keep tabs on what's going on in Vancouver. I listen to the podcast.
All right. Well, that's even more pressure. Now I've got a room full of people and McKenzie listening. So.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's good though. That's high. That's high. We like that.
Did you ask him for any critique, tips?
No, no. He said he reads the provies and he listens to
the air too.
Yeah.
He did.
Oh, now you're excited about that. No pressure there. It's just the pressure of the podcast when Bob's listening. But he gave us, I remember on Twitter, he gave us some love one time, and I think it was the highest. Yeah, I think it was the highest rated podcast ever. Like, it got national or, with his followers, international attention. Who knows? Anyhow.
Maybe when he's off at his cottage.
Sitting back listening.
So his margaritas.
Special hello to Bob tonight. Yeah.
He can give us a shout out.
I had on Saturday, as everybody, the hockey world was on Tavares Watch. Did you like Tavares Watch? Did you enjoy that?
I did not like did not like green eggs and ham. I did not like Tavares Watch. No.
You weren't just
Why?
Sitting by your phone? Well, because on as it went deep on Saturday, just for fun, whatever, I tweeted out that I was trying to imagine this sort of parallel universe
I'm in hell here in Vancouver. Like,
I know,
a hockey team. I'm thinking about a hockey team, can't score goals. Do you think I want to think about the good times in Toronto? Like, we're having Tavares. We may get Tavares. Like, fuck you guys. I don't want to hear it.
Fine,
but I ignored it all.
So I was just sitting there and nothing was happening. And
why would you put yourself through that?
Because it got great responses. Because I just said, like, I'm trying to envision this world where the holdup is the Canucks, like, at the 11th hour, coming through the back door, making this pitch. Right. And it wasn't that I thought the Canucks had a chance. It was just this idea of, Jim barging, like, you know, hang on, wait, like, we got something for you here. And so there were some great responses. And then somebody said, like, okay, if the Canucks were invited to this, you know, to CAA, the offices in L.A.
Can I tell you exactly how we're gone?
Well,
go on. I know exactly how we're going, but go on.
No, but somebody said, how long would it have taken the Canucks to mention Brisebois in their pitch to John Tavares? Like, you know that teams were going through their depth chart and where he would fit and what they've got coming and, you know, what would separate them. And somebody asked me, how long would it take the Canucks to mention Guillaume Brisebois?
Man, I think it would be, I saw it at the draft. He wasn't even asked a question about him. And 45 seconds into his opening address to, like, we're here at the draft. Jim, what's the state of the union? And 45 seconds later, it's Brisebois! I'm like, fuck, really? Already? Holy shit. But I thought he would have shown up and said to the Leafs, now that you got Tavares, why don't you send Matt Martin our way?
They missed out on Martin.
I know. They could have had him.
Too much grit. No room. No room. They had enough grit. They had identified all their grittiness. Was it Grit Wars? Is that what we're Grit Wars?
It's fun. Like, in social media right now, it's bananas. Like, I don't even want, like, okay, so I have those hits on 1040.
Yeah.
And they'll take a quote. Like, I'll say some good things, you know, like I did here. Like, I love Hughes. I love Pettersson. I love this. I love that. But this sucks. And they'll print out the part that sucks. And, like, there's a faction of fans, whether you call them the Kool-Aid drinkers, the anti-negatives, whatever you want to call them. There's like 8 or 9 of them, and they just swarm. And all day now, I didn't even tweet it out. Right. 1040 tweeted out a comment that if I thought that comment was relevant enough, I would have tweeted out myself. But they take it, they tweet it on 1040, and the rest of the day I'm boxing with these Kool-Aid guys, you know, arguing about, like, Beagle and Roussel and how tough the Canucks are and how much depth they have and are they going to score? This doesn't make any sense.
Can't you mute the conversation?
I guess. I mean, that's what...
Can't you get somebody at 1040 to, like, not tag you?
I don't know. I want...
Like, there are simple solutions to this problem. No, you've got enough angst. You've got enough things that bug you.
But I also think to myself,
you
got to
learn to simplify.
Like, I...
So you like it. You want to...
I don't like it. I don't know. You're right. Maybe I should just mute it. That's what I'll do.
It could be worse. Trust me. It could be worse. like when I find myself with 5 sort of minutes to myself, when the kids are off school now, and so I don't have a whole lot of time, but I've got 5 minutes to myself.
Are you like me? Do you think about Sutter?
No, I can't help myself now. Like, I go and look at Francesco's latest tweet
and
just read the replies, and there was, like, the all-timer this past week.
Which was what?
Like, you know, so sometimes he'll tweet about hockey, but then at times he'll branch out as well.
Yeah.
So there was one this week about why in a great city like Vancouver can't we have Uber and Lyft? He just throws that out there on Twitter.
Yeah.
And the first response was, in a great city like Vancouver, why can't we have the Stanley Cup?
He gets drilled on his mentions all the time. Like, sell the team. What the hell are you doing?
It doesn't matter. There is a sell the team guy. Like, every single. No matter what, he'll tweet about charity and the good stuff that, like, the Canucks Autism Network is doing or whatever, and sell the team. Because he had also tweeted out one about, we're getting ready to celebrate our 50th anniversary of the Canucks. What's your favorite moment of all time? And again, like, I just, for kicks, I read the responses, and one of the first guys in was when we drafted Jack Hughes.
In 2019.
Yeah. So it can get worse, see?
It could be worse.
We've talked about changes to the lineup. We finally found out. It took a while, but they seem to have solidified their coaching staff and playing musical chairs with the goalie. I think so.
They're not adding another assistant?
To the best of my knowledge, they're not adding an assistant. But they now, apparently, they've taken the lead of the Stanley Cup champs and have created a goaltending department now.
Oh, and another move I love. Like, this is, like, people say, like, you hate everything, you're always the same. I love this. I love the idea of bringing in a guy like Ian Clark, who was in Vancouver to 2010, had a really acrimonious departure. I think Luongo was upset about it. Clark, definitely that regime, that executive group, wanted nothing to do with Clark. There was some conflict over something they had agreed to and didn't agree to, and kind of a war of words. I didn't think I'd see him again back in Vancouver, but he goes to Columbus. Bobrovsky wins 2 Vezinas, I think, in 4 years or 5 years there. And both the other two coaches in the Canucks organization, Sanford and Kluche, are both protégés of Clark, right? Like, right. Clark's been around forever. Like, I was talking to DiPietro. DiPietro, as a kid, was reading Ian Clark books about goaltending. So now you have 3 guys that are all inside. Kluche, very forward thinking. Like, Clark's kind of stuck in his ways in some ways. They all come from the same kind of family cult of the same corner of the goalie world. Like, their beliefs all tie in together. Kluche's a little bit more forward thinking. And, you know, he wants to go spend time with more of his family. And I think he has opportunity when his kids grow up, are a bit older, the roles can flip. Clark can be the director, and Kluche can be more hands-on with the team. But all the help, the more help that they can get for these developing goalies, especially DiPietro and Demko, the two guys that I think, those are two guys that have a chance to be game changers, change the face of the franchise, get to the light at the end of the tunnel. The more voices that they're all kind of on the same page, but helping them with different things, I think is a great thing. The more attention to scouting goalies, finding other goalies. And there is no goaltending coach more plugged in to what is happening in Sweden, in Europe, hidden gems out there than Ian Clark. Like, I think he's going to be great from multiple levels. It's a really good move. And I think that right now that they're the only team in the league to have like three separate goalie coaches, a 3-tiered system. Washington had it last year, but Korn's, I think, leaving or left.
Right.
On his way out. So they don't have that right now. Like, I heard someone was telling me, like, Kluche left because they weren't paying him enough. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely not the case. Like, the Canucks pay, man. They pay their goalie coaches. It's why when Rolly Melanson moved on and he wasn't ready to be the NHL head goalie coach anymore, he took a job for the AHL team, because they're AHL, the Canucks pay their minor league goalie coach NHL salary. Like, they pay. They've invested, and that's fantastic. They've invested in that. I think it's going to show up on guys like DiPietro and Demko down the road. DiPietro is talking to Curtis Sanford, every other week. He's made big strides this year, has a huge, got the chance to play at the World Championship, has a chance to play in the World Junior, hold gold in Vancouver. It would be awesome. Great opportunities for them. And yeah, I love the whole concept. And I think that that is one of the few areas, like I often say, like, why can't they be on the cutting edge of this or on the cutting edge of that? This is one area where I can say, yeah, they're on the cutting edge of goaltending setup for the organization.
So Ian Clark comes in and you're guaranteeing Markstrom's going to win two Vezinas? Is that what
No, I didn't hear that. No.
I did wonder, like, Ian Clark was hired. They put the release out the other day. They've got this camp going on and he was nowhere to be seen. That'd and be I thought that was yeah. interesting, but apparently he is on his way over to Sweden right now to spend time with both Markstrom and Nilsson. Getting to know his goaltenders.
Love it.
Yeah.
See? It's working out already.
Who would you want to spend, like, if in the summer? Goalie would you, Markstrom or Nilsson, who would you want to spend time with?
Man, I think I'd go, like, Nilsson's calmer. He's more relaxed. Like, I don't think I could deal with the emotion. Like, I have emotional ups and downs over the course of a day and a week. Like, I need, my wife's, like, super calm all the time. Like, there's no big movements. Like, always the same flat line emotionally. So I would need to be around a guy like that. Like, I'd need to be around, like, my saddle mate, my wingman needs to be super calm.
You and Nilsson go get some ink, get tattoo. Well, they're both, I guess. So either guy might take it.
I'd let him pick out a tattoo for me, for sure.
Ear? If it was Markstrom, would you get an ear? No?
My God, man. Is that not, like, do you guys not think that that's the worst mask in the league? Can we not rally around that? It's fucking ears, man. Like, I swear, like, people, he's better than people think. And part of the reason that people, like, oh, Markstrom sucks are those fucking ears. Like, if he had a good, and I'm not even saying he has to have the best mask in the league, just a normal average mask, I think fans would, you'd see Markstrom jersey. Like, have you ever seen a Markstrom jersey at Rogers Arena?
I can't say that I have.
I'm telling you, it's the mask. It's the mask. Yep. I've told him. I said to him, man, your mask sucks. Everyone, and he said, I know. It's like my dad, his dad. He's like, my dad hates my mask. He's always trying to talk me out of it. And I'm like, fuck, dude, you got to listen to your dad. Listen to him.
Well, there was that game late in the season. I remember, and I couldn't remember. Like, you came into the rink. You were all excited, bouncing your step, and I couldn't figure out why. It was the night that he wore the other mask for charity. That,
right.
Yeah.
It was a kid made. And it looked great. It looked fine. Like, some kid made it, and it looked great. It looked totally acceptable. And I tried to talk him into it. I said, you should switch. That mask is way better than the ears. And I think that he gets a kick that it pisses people off. So I think, like, I could see him, like, there was, like, he started getting that big fucking Markstrom smile. His chest starts popping up. Like, he's loving that I hate his mask. Fuck. He's like, put that right in my veins, man. Let me take your anger.
We'll see if the mask comes back, returns for 2018.
Oh, he's coming back. He's not, I'm telling you, he's all in on this. He wouldn't, there was no budge. There was no, like, yeah, I'll think about it. My dad hates it too. I love it. I love that you guys hate it. Why? I'm not telling you. It sounds ridiculous, but it happened.
So Ian Clark's going to have to learn to live with the ears. But what about
a chance to talk him out of it.
Were you surprised? Or, I mean, you asked me if they were done. Like, I think they are. But were you surprised that if Doug Jarvis takes on the senior advisor role, essentially stepping away from the day-to-day operation, like, didn't that look like an opportunity to bring in another coach with some experience, some NHL coaching experience?
Right, because there's not a lot on the team right now. I think,
like, Manny Holter is going to take on more, and even at these, like, this summer prospect, like, he's already embracing this, taking on, like, he was barking at kids and screaming. Like, I've never heard Manny on the ice, like, oh yeah, no, like, he was like, I'm in charge here today. So it's like a new look. Like, he's kind of had the extreme makeover, Manny Malhotra edition. Anyways, well, he's still pretty inexperienced when it comes to coaching.
Right, and they brought in a coach to fix the Noel Brown, to fix the power play, and it worked. They had the ninth best power play in the league. It took some help from us.
It did.
We had to get Besser into the spot. You had to get Edler passing to Besser, and after that, those things happened. And I swear to God, to my deathbed, I am convinced that if you had not asked that question, I was going to ask you eventually, but if you had not asked that question, Edler never would, he wouldn't have passed to Besser the entire season. I mean, Besser would have had like 10 fewer goals over the course of the year, but Noah Brown did fix the power play ninth overall. So why not bring in a coach with experience with penalty killing to fix a PK that was, you know, it was one of the real weaknesses. And this is a team that needs great special teams to be competitive. They have to, They have to be in the top half of the league in both power play and penalty kill to keep their head above water.
We're winding things down here. Again, if you want to ask questions and get involved, we're here to certainly handle questions from the floor on anything that we've covered, anything we haven't covered. I'm going to finish up, though, with the question, I suppose, because I put this out as a Twitter poll about a week ago, and this was before July 1st, and it was a simple question. 73 points last year. Now that we know what we know about the Vancouver Canucks and the way their roster is shaping up, Twins are gone, but Pettersson's going to be here, and Quinn Hughes quite likely is going to be here. 73 points. Better or worse next year?
Fuck. I don't know. I would guess we're like right around there. I think that they're due.
And it was. It was split right down. 3,000 votes, 50-50.
I think they're due for a healthy season. Like that, and I say that. I've been saying that for the past 3 years. Past 3 years, they're the only team to be the top five in the league in terms of cap space lost injuries. That's impossible. It's an impossibly bad luck or something's fucked up for that to happen. So I do think that they are going to be healthier. Man, 73, and I've already
can they score fewer goals, but
they're gonna score fewer goals.
That's the
and
question.
They will be better defensively. Markstrom will be a better goalie, so I would say, you know, I'd probably take the over, but not by much. Like, they can still get to 80 points and not be a good team, so
I don't think many people in this room want to hear that they can get to 80 points.
Oh, they don't.
I think most people are in on Jack Hughes now. Yeah.
55 points then.
A popular answer. I'm not sure I'm ready to sit through a season of 55 points, so can bump it up a little.
It's not going to be the number. They just can't. It's impossible to have the number of injuries that they've had for the past three seasons. So I would say, like, I'll say 77 points will be my prediction, and if I'm right, be a huge backpatting scene by me, and if we'll forget it if I'm wrong.
Okay, fair enough. And I'll save my predictions for the first podcast of next season. So people have to wait through the summer before I get to my annual goal scoring predictions.
It was a great summer of the Marcus Granlund to 24 goals. And he had 19, right, that year. Like, that's another guy that's on the bubble.
Yeah.
Another guy that they've missed an opportunity. Like, I think that when Travis was hired, you talk about talking to the coach. Like, one of the things you can talk to the coach about, how do you plan to deploy your players? And if he said to the general manager, like, look, I don't see Granlund as a top six guy. I see him more as a defensive forward. You know, I see him third, fourth liner, which is how he deployed him for the whole season. Didn't play with the Sedins the whole year. Then that's when the general manager should think, like, fuck, he just scored 19. Like, maybe we can sell high on this guy, you know, to get ahead of things. And that's the thing that I think that's one of the frustrating aspects of how the Canucks have gone, is that they haven't, like, none of these guys, like, that, from September, that I keep tweeting out that tweet from where Friedman says, oh, Colorado wanted Hutton for Tyson Barrie, and the Canucks said no. Like, that's what looks ridiculous now. You should be able to plan. Sometimes you should be able to forecast what's going to happen to a certain player and in a certain situation and dump them before it sinks too low.
Awesome. All right. So we're wrapping up. Before we do, I asked Botch the question, but I just want to sort of sample the room here. 73 points last year.
Oh, right.
Show of hands. Who thinks they're going to be a better hockey team this coming season?
Better by not making the playoffs.
No, not about playoffs. Just on a point total basis.
Give this guy a podcast, man.
92.
All right. So it's the minority. It's a solid minority that thinks this team is going to improve. Yeah. That wasn't the majority. That was a minority. Yes. All right. First of all, I just want to thank Woody's Pub for having us out here a handful of times throughout the season. It's been fun. Thanks to all of you guys for giving up Wednesday night in the summer to come and talk hockey and listen to us talk about hockey. Thanks to everybody for the support of the podcast. When we started, who knew where it was going to lead? But it's become a great project, a lot of fun, home and away. And it's sort of gained a foothold and a pretty good following, and so much of that's due to social media. So we thank everybody for listening to what we have to say and our thoughts on the Canucks and the ins and outs and some of the behind the scenes stuff that we're able to bring on a weekly basis. So thanks so much for everybody coming out here and filling this room tonight.
Let's hear it.
And as I always do on the podcast, we finish with quick plug for Eagle Ridge. No, we got Eagle Ridge has foot the bill throughout a couple of seasons now. So our thanks to Eagle Ridge GM. They've been great partners to work with, and we've been done a couple of shows out of their place as well. And so, again, without their support, something like this wouldn't happen. And we thank Eagle Ridge GM. You know the website, eagleridgegm.com, and the showroom at 2595 Barnett Highway. So everybody, get out there and buy cars from Eagle Ridge GM. Enjoy your off season, and we will be back with another PatCast to start next season at some point in September. But that's going to do it for us for the summer. So we will say thanks for listening here on Province Radio.
All right.
Woo!
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.